right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, and welcome back to another of our pre-season preview shows. This episode is all about Benfica, and I'm delighted to say we've got an expert in the house, Mr. Mike Agostinho, Mr. Benfica himself. Thank you very much for joining us, mate. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Albert?
Brilliant, brilliant. It's a bit of a heat wave here in the UK, so
same here.
That's summer for you. You know, it's funny in the UK because we're not used to football in the warm weather. You know, for us it's cold, rain, sleet. But we get this one brief period where we get to enjoy the sun in the UK until about September. Then winter starts, and we're back to
what you're used to. Yeah,
exactly. But for now, it's great. And it's also a strange time in the season, obviously, because we're getting ready for the season to start. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of unknown certainties, which is why we wanted to get you on the show to talk about how Benfica have been in the off season and what we can expect going into the new season. So we really appreciate your insight. I'm going to start with the same question I'm starting with all of these guest shows, which is very simply, at the moment, heading into the new season, what is the mood amongst the Benfica fans?
Unfortunately, I think it's still very divided. The play has been better. I think it's been a pretty successful preseason. We got one more game in about a half hour against Fulham, which should be a good test. But regardless, there's still a very divided fan base, whether it's about the president, Rui Costa, whether it's about the manager, Roger Schmidt. The João Neves sale just made things worse. Half the fan base kind of understands why. The other half is very angry about the deal. It's been the reality of Benfica for the last long time.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to give me an answer along those lines. A lot of talking points to dig into. We'll get into all of them in due course. I am curious to hear about pre-season because it's a time where you can sort of get a bit of a grasp on some of the newer players and how the manager's going to be lining up heading into the new season. Yeah. Is there anything stood out from pre-season? I gather there's been good results and quite a few goals scored.
Yeah. For me, it's Pavlidis, the Greek striker that we signed. He has scored, I think, 7 in 5 matches, something like that. But more than the finishing, more than the scoring goals, what I like is his movement and the way he puts himself in position to score those goals. That's something we've been lacking since Gonçalo Ramos left. He also is very good at being that first line in the high press, the gegenpressing that Roger Schmidt relies so heavily on. And now we know it's really all or nothing with him in regards to that style of play. He showed last season it was very hard for him to play any other way. So hopefully with him in there, and Leandro Barreto has come over from the Bundesliga. I forget which
Mainz,
club he was.
I believe Mainz.
He's come over from Mainz. For me, he's been a good complement with Florentino in the midfield. We'll see if Florentino's going to stay, if he's going to go. This is, again, the reality of every Portuguese team at this time of the year. You get excited, and then a player gets swooped up, and you got to change everything again. But for me, they've been a decent pairing in midfield. Some say they're too similar and that you need a more of a like a Kökçü-style midfielder in there with Florentino, but who knows if Kökçü is going to be here next week. There's been interest again coming from different clubs. So again, it's the uncertainty this time of year that makes it, for me at least, hard to get too excited, but also it's also hard to get too down as well, because a lot of things can still happen. And I think all three of the big teams have had similar preseasons. We've all kind of rolled this preseason. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
No, absolutely. I always say with preseason, it's so hard to read into results because there's so many factors going on with, you know, managers trying different formations and players at different stages of fitness and players sort of almost just trying to get to the end of preseason without being injured in some way. So it's kind of hard to read too much into it. But obviously, as you say, you can see little things here and there. And the thing that you mentioned that's really interesting to me is about Pavlidis and the leading the line in terms of the press. That was, you know, something that I think Roger Schmidt has lacked since Gonçalo Ramos left, and last season it definitely seemed to be something that he wasn't happy about. Might be a kind of insight into why Pavlidis has been signed. You know, obviously it's Benfica signed 2 strikers last year and a third's come in, so it kind of is perhaps a glimpse into maybe Roger Schmidt being given more of the power over the transfers than he's had in the past. And I mean, that's an interesting one, because I would be of the opinion that Schmidt has earned that right, given the kind of first season he had and what he delivered with players that
Yeah, I'd
ultimately
agree
he
with that.
was happy with. Let's stay on transfers then, because you know everyone's favorite topic, the transfers.
Everybody.
We've talked about Pavlidis and the incomings and Barreiro, who's another interesting player. And I guess it's fair to say that the third sort of marquee first team signing has been the left back,
Yeah,
Best.
Nicholas Best. Yeah.
He seems a really interesting player, not just because of the facial hair, but also I hear that he's got an interesting playing style and perhaps a bit more attacking than what you
Yeah,
thought.
he's more of a true wing back versus a converted winger, which is what we've kind of been dealing with the last couple of seasons. And, you know, last season, trying to replace Grimaldo, we tried all kinds of different things. We tried our central midfielder there for much of the season. We tried our central defender there for part of the season. So both he and Alvaro Carreras have looked good in midfield, I mean, in preseason against each other as left wing backs. And it looks like there's actually some competition for that spot, which I think is only going to help the team in the long run. And should one drop in form or pick up an injury, it looks like the other will be ready to step in. So that's been promising in this preseason. And he is a, I think he brings a work rate that Benfica severely lacked. I think sometimes Benfica over invests in technique players, for lack of a better term. And sometimes you need a few workers to get in there and to get dirty, to get up and down the pitch with pace, to have the lung capacity to go up and down. And he seems to be cut more out of that mold. And I think it'll provide more balance for Benfica this season, you know, rather than having an adapted player kind of just trying to stay in his lane and trying to just do what he can do and not take too many risks, not hurt the team too much by playing out of position. I think by having him there, there's a little bit more balance. And then of course it's who's going to play in front of him. Will David Neres go? Will he stay? Di Maria, I don't think there's any ink on paper yet. So everyone's assuming he'll be back at some point, which could completely throw off the chemistry of the team completely, because he's as great of a player as he is. He does do certain things and doesn't do other things, and then other players have to overcompensate for it. But I mean, there's still so many things to iron out. Prestiani has looked really good in this preseason. And again, there's a lot of options for Roger Schmidt there, and more of his type of players, I think, right now. Of course, a couple injuries or a couple transfers, and that can change everything. But right now, it looks like he has the kind of pieces that he likes to play with. And it looks like he's able to build the kind of team he wants to build, to play his style. Now, will it work against, you know, a Riuav or a Casapia that are going to sit with two deep-lying blocks for 80 out of the 90 minutes? We'll have to wait and see. First match of the season's away to Famalicão. That's going to be tough. That's where we finished the season.
Wow, and, interesting.
Yeah, so that's going to be very tough. It's one thing to play Brentford and to play Feyenoord and to play Fulham, who are going to play football against you and who are going to leave space for you to counterattack into. And Benfica's best matches last season were in the, you know, were when they were able to counterattack. I shouldn't say it was in the Champions League, because there were portions of Champions League matches that were some of their best play. That first half against Inter comes to mind, where they were up 3-0 before squandering it. But when teams come forward and they allow that space for Benfica to counter, like most Portuguese teams, they're very good in that role. When the other teams want to sit back and want to just take away all the passing lanes and force you to do something creative out of the box to pull a defender out, and Benfica don't shoot from outside, from distance. They don't pull the, not just Benfica, most modern teams don't shoot from distance anymore, which allows teams to really camp it in deeper and to really cut off those lanes, because everybody wants to be the mid 2000s Barcelona that can, you know, combine and tiki taka their way into and tap every goal in. And teams have gotten really good at playing against that. So I'm hoping that this season, you know, we can, with some of the new players and with some of the added confidence, that we can kind of break that mold a little bit, find a little bit more dynamic of an attack, and keep creating chances. Right now we're getting those chances, and like I said, Pavlidis off the ball has been very impressive. He gets into the dangerous spaces where he makes those tap-in goals look easy. Reminding me a lot of like a Ruud van Nistelrooy back in the day. All his goals looked really easy, but you have to give him the credit for being in the precise location to be able to tap those goals in.
Absolutely. It's a very, very difficult skill to make looking scoring that easy.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Just staying on incomings quickly, is there anything in your instinct that you think is missing that you still need to bring in?
I think we could still, it depends on what's going to happen with Kalkshu, but I think we can still use another creative number 10-ish midfielder. I think Prestiani has looked like he can be the Rafa in this team.
Nice.
And he's played really well behind the striker. Marcos Leonardo's played a little bit there as well behind Pavlidis. Whether or not Roger's going to go with two strikers or he's going to play one behind the other, we'll see. But I think I could use another 10-ish. The 10 is kind of a different player now than it used to be, but someone that sits in behind the striker and that can play that setup ball and make that final pass, that final delivery because that was missing last season too. It wasn't just the lack of finishing. The final delivery was missing a lot of times. If it wasn't Di Maria, it wasn't getting delivered in a lot of people criticize Di Maria, but in a normal season with a better finishing rate, he probably has 15 assists last season, you know? With a striker that seemingly is better at getting on the end of those and putting himself in better positions, it will be interesting to see if Di Maria does come in, if he's going to be able to rack up the assists this season with that kind of a striker to work with. We'll have to wait and see. Also, another right back would be nice because Thiago Gouveia has been the backup right back in preseason.
Wow, okay.
So, I mean, another right back because Ba is not going to stay healthy for 34 rounds. We can, the body of work over the past two seasons suggests he's going to miss some weeks. So
plus the cups
I would like
and the European football
plus
and
the
all
cups,
that.
Yeah. And two more Champions League games in the first stage this year. So that too, adjusting to the new Champions League format will be interesting to see if that brings more rotation in the league matches. That's not Roger's strength, rotating players. He likes to pick his 11 and run them until they can't go anymore. A lot of the times he's made good changes, it's been because it's been forced. So including Antonio Silva two seasons ago was moved into the starting lineup because he had no choice. It wasn't this brilliant decision.
Very good point.
It was, you know, and right now with Otamendi still with Argentina at the Olympics, we don't know when he's going to come in. The center back situation, I've found Morato to be disappointing this preseason. And I do like the idea of Antonio Silva and Tomas Araújo and Otamendi when he comes back. You know, the three of them maybe rotating a little bit more than usual, keeping them fresh. But we'll see. Antonio could go at any – until the market's closed, until the window's closed, you can't really rule out any transfers in or out. So – I'm always anxious to get to that September 1st and to know until January, nobody else is leaving.
Absolutely. And of course, there is one elephant in the room in terms of transfers, which is João Neves that we haven't discussed
yet. Yeah.
At the time of recording, it's not officially announced, but it could well be even by later this evening or tomorrow. So it's what we expect to happen. I'm interested to get your thoughts on that deal in general, I mean, your opinion on it, how you feel about him leaving and the transfer fee and all that kind of stuff and the potential replacement coming in and how the fan base as a whole are responding to it. Because I have seen quite a few people, I suppose, obviously displeased that a great young player is leaving, but also perhaps a bit dissatisfied with the fee of 70 million euros, which is quite a bit under his release clause.
Yeah, it is. It's under his release clause, but I just read Dani Olmo went for 65 million today, or is about for 65 million to Barcelona. So
that does put some perspective on it.
You have to put some perspective on it. Okay, it's still a 19-year-old kid. He didn't exactly impress at the Euro with the time he was given. I'm a little more rational about this because it's just these players are going to go. It's come to a point following this team long enough. When a player gets to this level, he's going to go. And yes, fans get mad because what happens is these kids come through the youth program. They come through the academy. You know, they kiss the eagle on their chest. They do everything the fans like. And fans take that as if, oh, he's never going to leave. You know, he's going to say no to all the money in the world. And it's not just his decision. And I know I saw somewhere today that Antonio Silva's brother tweeted that João was forced out and that he's going against his will. And there's probably some truth to that, but a professional also understands it's not just his decision. It, the, it, the club has to do what the club has to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people are going to scream when they hear this because, you know, the clause was 120 and he's going for, you know, 60 plus objectives, but half of that. But, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of, Benfica spends more than any other team for whatever reason. They bring in the most money, but they also put out the most money.
Mm.
And, you know, the bookkeeping, I've been exchanging messages with some people that understand this a little bit better than I do, especially when it's written in Portuguese and in acronyms. I sometimes have to ask what these line items mean. And there's a lot of other in the budget. So there's a lot of money going out under the category of what we'd say is other. So there's a lot of suspicion as to where that money's going and, you know, why is the club bleeding money so much? And at the same time, the kid has a chance to make a 10 times, you know, increase on his wages. He's going to increase his wages by tenfold. So it's hard, any rational person, to justify staying behind with that kind of an offer on the table. Now, from a football sense, it'll be interesting because he's going to presumably go into a midfield that already features Vitinha, which is a very similar player. And he can't imagine he's going to walk in and you know, replace him immediately because PSG are very high on Vitinha. He played a lot last season. But João's going in with a much bigger price tag than Vitinha did. But I don't think that PSG operates on that. Like at Benfica, when you spend a certain amount, the player has to play. It's the pressure's on right from the start that he has to play. I don't think PSG has that same kind of pressure. So I think he can get time to develop. But for me, I don't think this is the best footballing place for him to go. I think there's probably better teams where he'd fit in sooner, have a bigger role, you know, grow quicker as a player. But this is the team that put up the money that, you know, that was on the price tag. And if he's going against his will, he's doing a very good job of being very professional about it because you don't see him stomping his feet. He's, he's been very quiet, laid low, which he should do. This is why players have agents, is for agents to be in these talks and not them.
Mm-hmm.
It's disappointing because you've seen a kid come up through the youth ranks and you've seen him, you know, thrown into the first team to replace an Enzo Fernandez that he didn't even have time to, you know, adjust to. And he just went in and he did it in his own way. He became his own player. He was never Enzo Fernandez. He was João Neves from day one. And now he's got to be replaced. But I will say this happening in July and August is much better than in January.
Yeah.
So if hanging on to him meant that in January, someone was going to put more money on the line and pull him in January, I would have been more against that from a footballing standpoint. Right now, the team's had a whole preseason without him, and it's been working. It doesn't devalue him in any way, but they've shown that they've got other options, and other players are eager to step into that spot, and they're working to win that spot over. So I feel better with it happening now, even if it's for less money. Because at the end of the day, we want our team to win. Yes, the finances have to be in order, but we want our team to win. The goal is not just to be in the black on the spreadsheet at the end of the season. The goal is to win trophies. And yeah, we're not as strong of a team without him as we were with him, but it doesn't mean that over the course of the next several months, we can't grow to surpass that level we had with him in the team. And again, someone else, you can, the elephant in the room too is the rumored return of Renato Sanches. Yeah. So we'll see. It's a wild card. I mean, we've got a not so good history of taking on loan players from PSG recently, big names with history of injuries, you know, with Draxler and with Juan Bernat. So Renato is now the third PSG player to come in on loan. If this does in fact happen, however, it could work. And I'm not against these loans because they're very low risk for Benfica.
Yeah.
A worst case scenario, it doesn't work. And PSG is paying the majority of their wages anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And we're disappointed that it didn't work. But the potential high on the other side, the potential payout is so much more. And who knows, he could redevelop into that Renato Sanches, at least in moments that we saw during that 2015-2016 season where he ended up, you know, becoming a fixture in the national team too in that Euro that went on to win Euro 2016. So he is not the same player he was 8 years ago, obviously. He's older. He's been injured plenty. But it doesn't mean there can't be a role for him in this team, and that he can't do his part to push this team past that threshold of where we were before.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to know whether Renato Sanches is coming back on loan at Roger Schmidt's request. My suspicion would be perhaps not, but I do agree with you.
Probably not.
I do agree with you that even despite that, it's still very low risk because, you know, Schmidt's got his central midfield pairing that he seemed to want with Florentino and Barrera, who came in. And there can be a time for Renato Sanches to come in and he can be a bit of a wild card, you know, if they want something a bit different and there's not so much pressure on it. So in that sense, it kind of makes sense. And I do wonder perhaps whether this is Rui Costa kind of trying to give the fans a little something back by bringing back a much loved player, which would all make sense. And I really agree with your assessment on Joao Neves. I think he was always going to be sold at some point, and I don't think he would ever been under any illusion that was the case. I'm sure he would have known that himself. And these things happen so quickly these days. Mm-hmm. It's just football in 2024. You know, long gone are the days when a player comes through the youth academy, makes an impact, and stays for 2, 3, maybe even 4 seasons before making a big move. You know, these things happen so quickly in football. And the 70 million, I think, is an acceptable fee.
It is.
Maybe the market's different than it was even 12 months ago or 24 months ago.
I think it got inflated. It was very inflated for a long time. And I think it's coming back to a more realistic place.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So I think it's I completely sympathize with any Benfica fan who's disappointed that one of their favorite players is leaving.
No doubt. Especially
As a neutral, I'm sad to see him go. Mm-hmm. I loved watching that kid every week. So
Right. And you worry about the footballing side because it's very easy for these players to follow this money, end up on the bench, end up exactly where Renato Sanches and where João Félix currently are. Mm-hmm. And there's always that risk. But at the end of the day, this really angers fans, but it is a business at the end of the day, and the club has to be business. And they could have, again, like I said, they could have waited, but what's to say they don't get more money in January and they can't deny it then, or they can't prevent it then? And then it could destabilize the team much worse in January when you don't necessarily have the players, informed. You don't have the players preparing to replace him like you do right now.
Exactly.
And you may not have what happened with Enzo was there was no time to go get a replacement. And when you do go, and this happened last season when Gonzalo left, the club felt pressure to get a replacement without any time. And we got Arthur Cabral, who doesn't fit the model. He just doesn't fit what Benfica are trying to do. And he was given plenty of opportunities. He just can't adapt into the player that the team needs him to be. And, you know, I don't want to see them make that mistake again. So I prefer, you know, going through this preseason and coming up with solutions rather than him coming in, being part of the preseason prep, kind of the way Gonzalo was last season. He played all preseason. You got excited. It looked good. And then he was off the night before the Super Cup. He was sold. So, And, you know, fans don't always understand and don't really want to. They want to go back to the Benfica pre-Bosman where you could keep players. Like, they think if the player forces a move, just sit him. It's like, you can't do that. That's your asset.
Absolutely.
You can't just sit a player and let him rot. You're not going to get anything for him at that point. It's a different world today, and I'm not saying it's better football today, but it's the reality that we see today. Players are going to move. There's money in other leagues, and the Portuguese player coming through all three of these youth academies, the illusion I think fans have is that they dream of playing for their club and leading their club to glory, but their dream is really to move to the Premier League or to La Liga or to the Bundesliga and make the real money. That is their dream. And that's why they sign with agents very early. And agents are quickly trying to find the moves. And agents get paid by making deals and collecting commissions. And this is the way the game functions now. This is just, it's the business of football. It's not as romantic, but it is the reality right now in the game.
Absolutely. We've spoken about Roger Schmidt already a little bit. I want to ask you specifically on him because, you know, we ended last season, and I think it was fair to say there was a growing portion of Benfica fans who kind of turned against Roger Schmidt.
And oh, yeah, no
we
doubt.
We saw some some of that vocalized in the stadium towards towards the end of the season. I'm wondering if that has perhaps settled down a little bit, that kind of opposition over the summer, or is that kind of vocal portion of the fans still there? And what's the feeling towards Schmidt at the moment?
I think there it's still there. I don't think it's as vocal and as large for now, because things are going better. And it seems like the club is at least bringing in the type of players that fit what he wants to do. As soon as something goes wrong, though, it's gonna be back. It's just the reality at being at Benfica. As soon as something goes wrong, you know, some people I think only enjoy being upset. They only enjoy not, you know, being unhappy with the club, and that's when they come forward. That's when they get vocal. But yeah, Roger's been more popular than he is now. He's definitely not at a height of popularity. Same goes for Rui Costa. I think if the elections were this October, he'd have a hard time winning. This season is very, very crucial for him if he wants to continue to be Benfica's president. There's a lot of people that are not on board with him. He tried to do some PR, you know, some good movements over the summer. He had a media day, so to speak, where he handpicked the media to come in. They asked these very fluffy questions, and nobody was impressed. You know, there was a lot of pushback to what he said. Personally, he said exactly what I expected him to. So I was neither upset nor impressed. It was exactly what I had expected. But people really get their hopes up that he's going to say the things that they want to hear, and that he's, you know, they want to see him hold people accountable, including himself. But the thing is, what that means is something different for everybody. Well, what does that mean? Do they want him to step? For some people, that means stepping down. For other people, that means naming names. For other people, a simple apology is enough. But I think more than words, I want to see corrections made. I'm not really interested in him taking a microphone or going on the club's channel on a Thursday night and just giving us words and then going back to doing the same thing. I want to see actions. And so far, I think the movements in the transfer market this particular window, I think, have been good actions. We'll see if it results. I mean, there's always a chance that it doesn't translate once the matches start for real. And it doesn't mean that they're bad moves just because it didn't work out. There's always that possibility that things are well planned, well thought out, and everything should work, and then it doesn't. That does happen sometimes for some teams. And teams do have down seasons. Sometimes the same exact roster, as we say in the United States, same exact players can from one season to another look like a completely different team for whatever reason, whether it's the messaging, whether it's just the relief of pressure, whatever those factors are. You can, even in Roger's first season, there was very little change from the Benfica team that was third place the season before, and it looked like a different team just because the messaging had changed, a couple of roles had changed. Last year it seemed to stagnate a little bit, and now this year is a real test to see if he can get it back on track. I think it's a defining year for both Roger and for Rui Costa this season.
I think that's a really, really interesting point. And I think it's a really interesting dynamic at Benfica at the moment between Costa and Schmidt.
Yeah.
And of course, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, I've always seen Benfica as a club who did things almost culturally, in a good way, and including how the football club was run. Like a prime example being transfers. Like there was a system at Benfica where, for example, the most obvious example being scouting South America for the next promising young players, bringing them over, selling them on. That to me was a kind of system that existed almost above whoever happens to be in charge at that time.
Sure.
And I think it's kind of interesting at the moment to see the dynamic between that, which I think still continues to happen. In perhaps Marcus Leonardo is a perfect example of that, a player who was signed within that kind of system, but then also with a manager who kind of pushes against that, because Roger Schmidt is certainly a manager who kind of needs things built around him rather than him working around the structure of the club. And I think not everything's been perfect in that sense. You know, obviously some of the signings haven't worked because maybe they haven't quite worked with the manager, and maybe the manager's got things wrong where he hasn't bought enough into the culture of the club. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you know, at the end of last season, I was of the opinion that Roger Schmidt should stay, because I thought he proven that he was more than capable of winning the Premier League. Yeah. And ultimately, if that's Benfica's aim, then I think he's proven that he's more than good enough as a manager to do that. It's a thing that we've touched on time and time again in this conversation, but it does seem that perhaps that alignment is getting a bit closer, and this kind of third I suppose in Roger Schmidt's case, it's kind of the third, and Rui Costa slightly less, but it's almost third chance of bringing that together, getting things to be cohesive enough to get things to work and ultimately to win the league. And that does bring me on nicely into my last question for you, which is essentially your expectations for the season. It doesn't have to be, you know, specific predictions in terms of league position, but just when you look at Benfica now, taking into account everything that's happened over the summer, where they are with the manager and the ownership, what are your expectations for the club? And ultimately, you know, what it comes down to is, do you think that there's enough of a squad in place and a system in place for you guys to win the league again, which is really where you should be?
I think it could be a difficult season to win the league. The league gets more and more difficult to win in the sense that it requires more and more points every season to win this league. True. So, I mean, we're getting to a point where 90 points is really getting to be the magic number, which is really high for a 34-round league. So you can't control what the other teams do in all of their other games. So you can't. I tend to not get so focused on the position. Okay, so I'm looking for, you know, 88, 89, 90 points, which not long ago would be considered a record, but really it's where the three teams need to be right now. I'm looking for more goals being scored because goals can hide all kinds of weaknesses. And that was Roger Schmidt's first season. They pressed high, won the ball in high areas, and they turned it into goals, and it masked other issues that were definitely there, but we were able to overlook them because they were scoring 2.5-3 goals a match. And when you do that, you're going to win a lot more than you lose. Last season, that fell off a little bit, and we didn't have that 20-goal scorer, which I hope Pavlidis is going to be, which Ramos was before that. Because in this league, I think you do need that, which is funny. Kind of, you know, in the rest of the modern football, in the big five, I think a striker is less crucial. A striker scoring a certain amount of goals is less crucial because the leagues are more balanced and it takes fewer points to win it. I'm not saying it's less challenging. They're very difficult leagues. But you have some room to recover from a poor start or from a poor run of results. And in this league, in Sporting showed the turnaround they made just by bringing in – it wasn't just by bringing in a striker, but largely from bringing in a striker that got you those 25 to 30 goals.
And I don't think it's unfair to say the upgrade from Polino to Gyökeres is what really won them the title. Oh, I don't think that's unfair.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And, you know, and if he follows up his second season like he did his first, which, well, that's not a given. We've seen strikers when they're new come in, and now teams have a year of experience on him. They've got a year of film of their own defenders playing against them, not just watching him play in the championship. But now they've got, you know, how he plays against Portuguese teams and Liga teams. So we'll see. We'll see how he recovers from this injury and see what kind of season he has. But not having that kind of a striker scoring goals, because neither Benfica nor Porto had that last season. And you saw them fall behind, even though I think Benfica were artificially closer than they were in reality for a while because of that comeback win at home against Sporting. Kind of, it went from like a 7-point deficit to a 3-point deficit in the span of a couple of minutes. And that kept it closer longer than it probably should have been. But both Benfica and Porto really struggled getting goals last season from strikers. They had to come from somewhere else. And when they have to come from somewhere else, you're not getting 2.5 to 3 goals a game. You're getting a goal to a goal and a half a game. In some games, you're getting held, you know, scoreless. You're getting held to the clean sheet. And you can't win if you only draw, that's like losing in our league.
Absolutely.
A 0-0 draw is like a loss. You 100%. Can't afford one. You can't afford one unless you have a large enough lead. So we'll have to see how this season goes. But I can see realistically the big three kind of getting way out in front early. And it's always the matches against the other teams that really decide the league. I think, more or less, they usually wash against each other between the three of them. But again, the margins are going to be so tight because you just can't afford to drop many points. And the first team to drop points is going to immediately be under immense pressure. It could be round one or two, and already people are going to be saying, "Oh, this isn't the season for us. This is." I can already see where this is going. It happened to Benfica last year, losing to Boavista in round one, and there was already a panic button hit. And you have to maintain some calmness. You have to maintain your confidence, and you have to just continue to go to work every week. And sometimes you have to grind out these matches. It's not always going to be pretty. You're going to get a Monday night at Rio Ave where it's raining sideways across the, and you're just going to have to, you're going to have to find a way sometimes.
Don't forget Santa Clara are back in the league.
Exactly. Santa Clara are back. So that's and Nacional too. So true. if you can land the plane on Madeira Island, that's like half a goal. If you could actually land the plane and play the match. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be interesting because the gap between the three, let's say five, we can even say five for this discussion, the big three, Braga and Vitória, are really separating from the rest of the league each year. Mm-hmm. And I think that gap is going to continue to grow for some time, at least until the new centralization of TV rights kicks in, and it's like 27, 28. And then that even is going to take time before those clubs, you know, start to have an injection of cash, and whether or not they can even manage that cash is a whole nother variable that remains to be seen. But it's, you know, what it does is it amplifies the pressure in these away matches because you can't afford to drop very many points. And every match that's on short rest, you know, because there was a Champions League midweek or a TASA match midweek, the pressure just gets more and more and more each season. And like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, the three teams are separated by 3 or 4 points at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they kind of take care of everybody else and then have to decide it amongst them, because that gap is getting bigger each season and they're spending more money. Even when they don't have the money, they're spending it, you know, and Sporting find a way to bring in players, Porto find a way to bring it. We hear all summer about their financial issues and that Villas-Boas is paying staff out of his pocket. But then when push comes to shove, they get players or they keep players, which is like bringing in a transfer. When you get to keep a Chico Conceição from one season to the other, that's almost like bringing in a transfer. Or for Sporting, keeping Ruben Amorim and keeping Gorka Arias for another season, that's almost like bringing in a transfer, because they were so, everyone had, you know, had, would have put the bet down that they were going to go at the end of the season, and here we are in August and they're still there. So it's going to be an interesting season. I don't discount either of the rivals.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you so much. It's been a fascinating conversation. And I think we're really kind of building a picture of Benfica as definitely a club, I think, with more positive signs than last season. And a few of the issues look to be heading in the right direction. Definitely.
I hope so. Yeah.
Still some question marks, perhaps. I think it's going to be really fascinating 10 games into the season to see where the table's shaping up. And it's very hard to predict at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Britta, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
you, and of course, let everybody know where they can find you, because Mike does a fantastic podcast all about Benfica. I know we've got Benfica listeners who listen every week to us. And so yeah, let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah. On Twitter, I'm at Mike Agostinho, at MikeAgostinho. The podcast is Mr. Benfica. I've now merged it with some of my other podcasts into one project. So it's on the Parking the Bus podcast network. But if you Google Mr. Benfica, it'll come up.
Yeah.
And I also run www.mrbenfica.com, where you can, it's not updated very often, but you can find the episodes there if you have trouble finding it anywhere else.
Brilliant. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you. Of course, best of luck for the season.
All right. Thank you.